Just a few days ago, I sat with Steve Martin and had a conversation about the brand new long-awaited album featuring him and the Steep Canyon Rangers, available now on Rounder. Been a while since they did an album by themselves. You're going to enjoy it. This was a in-person visit just a few days ago, actually, from this broadcast, and I enjoyed it immensely, and I think you will, too. This is Steve Martin. Welcome, Steve Martin, back to Ungrow Bluegrass. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's great to be on your show again. And the Rangers and I have been traveling around, doing television shows, doing internet shows, playing any possible place we can.
A lot of publicity behind this new album, and plus just great music and all. But, I mean, the new album is getting so much attention.
Well, I got to say, Rounder has done a great job. They've made at least 5 music videos.
That's right.
You know, we have a Christmas song coming out. They made a video for that.
Oh, that's already been done.
You know, I always think, don't spend your money. I mean, but I'm glad they are, you know.
The new album.
I'm probably spending my money coming up.
I didn't want to get there, but yeah. You know how that works. It's, yeah, we can do all this PR, and so here's your check.
Mm-hmm.
When I look at the title of the album, this is you and the Steep Canyon Rangers, the long-awaited album. I see the last album that you did together, specifically you two, was the Rare Bird Alert. If we just wanted
Rare Bird Alert,
right?
Yeah.
Not that you didn't do the live thing with Edie when you were touring with that stuff.
And that's a little different.
Yeah.
That was almost it was really more of a video.
Yeah,
with
right.
A CD attached. Yeah. I'm not even sure people were aware there was a CD attached with just the music
on
it. Yeah.
So, and here's the question. I'm going to talk about the album, of course. That's why I'm here. I appreciate your time. But and I think people, maybe consumers of music think, oh, you did an album, and now you're going to get new songs for another album. And when I look at what you put in this album, some of the germination for some of these things started a long time ago as far as the music.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Certainly some of the solo banjo songs I play
right.
started as music for Steve and Edie.
Right.
And Edie wrote lyrics and
that's right.
melodies and things for those songs. But I always liked them also as just banjo tunes. And actually, they weren't even scheduled to be recorded. I just said, hey, turn on the recorder. I said, can I play through this mic? Yeah. And I sat down and I did one take on each of them.
Yeah.
And I was very happy with it.
I recognized them right away. And here was something I was curious about. You did the Love Has Come For You, So Familiar, and then worked in collaboration with Edie and other people on the mm-hmm. Bright Star soundtrack. Mm-hmm. So Edie's not there to collaborate with. And I just wonder, even though not all these songs are brand new, but you worked with her so well on those projects, and you did before her, but now you're without her again. How does that...
Well, Edie is a great lyric writer.
I
was
so
always
too.
Amazed at how she could take my melodies. She would write, in many cases, not always, but in many cases, write a new melody on top of it. So we'd have this counterpoint. I'd have the banjo melody. She would have her vocal melody, and along with these lyrics that kind of skewed what I was doing on the banjo. She'd extend the line over. She'd make the break in a different place. But
you're explaining that very well. This is what I anticipated she was what was doing when I started hearing these things, but you're explaining
yeah.
it very well to me.
And that was still a long collaboration. But during that time, you know, I kept thinking, I used to write songs and lyrics too.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, I was writing little things, and I had some tunes I'd collected, and then decided it was time to do a Steve and Rangers album.
Sure, why not? And they're such a great band. We talked about this before.
They're so
but,
great.
And I think, aren't they getting better and better and better?
Yes.
I just think that they're internal. They were always a great band, and even before you found them and paired up with them. But I think their writing and their performance and their personality is just becoming so, I think, dominant on the stage.
Absolutely. And also, I was talking to them last night. I said, guys, you realize that you're a band. I play with you guys, and whenever we play, whether you're playing alone or with me, we play all original music.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's
and Woody
point.
Was saying, and he said, you know, it took a while when we first started playing, when we were playing original music, for people to get used to it.
Because
they're
yeah.
so used to hearing the classic.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah, it's I was a fan when they had a different makeup of the band. They had a woman in the band
right.
many
that's,
years
yeah,
ago.
That's a long
and that's
time
when
ago.
I first heard them. I
yeah.
thought, wow, and they've just done nothing but progress since then. Mm-hmm. You've written some. And
so you're saying it's progressive not to have a woman?
No.
Okay.
This is not a controversy thing
okay.
at all. I just as they change,
I'm kidding.
You know, they didn't drop any steps at all, and I still be. You've written some We've communicated about this on some of the lyrics on here, though. And the reason I mentioned Edie is that, gosh, when you write with someone like Edie, are your lyrics, are they reflective of the way she used to put lyrics together? I mean, some of the things that you've written on this are just wonderful poetic devices. I know you did that before, but
well, what I learned from Edie, I don't feel like copied her.
No.
I know that, but what I did learn from her was how to do it. That she'll take the song and she'll listen to it until it, in a sense, speaks to her.
Okay.
And it gives her the area, and it gives her, you know, the occasional line, or, you know, sometimes all it takes is a phrase, and you've got a whole song appearing in your head.
You have some really intense and beautiful lyrics, and I'm not skipping ahead, except that I am. Canadian Girl, to me, is one that I thought was a wonderful description and structure of you actually mentioned some landmarks in Canada, mm-hmm. and coming back and forth, and I thought the lyrics in that were just, that was the one that struck me first.
Thank you very much.
I just thought it was gorgeous.
I like to go from specific to general. In other words, so for example, Canadian Girl, you know, it talks about places,
yes.
here's where I am, and then it kind of summarizes, you know, at the end, won't you, you know, make my life, whatever the
right.
lyric is. And I do that again in Bad Night.
Bad Night was phenomenal.
Where it's very specific about he's dropping his girlfriend off. She doesn't invite him in. He drives home. He's expecting a call. It doesn't come.
He winds on his front porch.
Yeah, and then he tries to write a song. And then the last lyric is generalizing about what writers and artists do. They write to get the sadness out.
And see, the very first time we chatted, one of the opening statements when we're talking about all the projects you were involved in, and I've learned this since then, is that you consider yourself primarily a writer. If you wanted to wear one tag, and then it applies to so many parts of your life, but the lyric in here that writers can be full of doubt, they write to get the sadness out. And I may have even communicated with you about it. I thought, this is the writer, Steve.
Yeah, well, you know, that's not always true. They might be writing to get the happiness out.
No, I understand.
Yeah, and but they're writing to get something out.
Yeah.
And, you know, I also go on in that lyric to say, and they stick in your head,
yeah.
these little phrases and things.
Yes.
They follow you your whole life.
I really think that Caroline, if that's not in all of the parking lot picking, but because it's such a fun, I mean, so the chorus is just, and it, is it going to be a new Fox on the Run? I don't know, but everybody's going to be doing the Caroline chorus
at
some point.
That would be very fun. Flattering, but, you know, I realized as I was writing the song that the lyrics in the verses are very busy and telling a lot of story. And I thought, this better have a chorus that's so simple.
That's a good point.
And I kept thinking, Caroline, then I'd try to come up with an alternate line.
I never
you know,
thought
you're
about
my
that.
Girl, Caroline. It never worked, and it just was Caroline.
Caroline, yeah. The
it's like a choir, I feel like.
Yes.
Chiming
and
in.
Everybody,
angel choir.
And everybody can join in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's something that
Stephen Colbert joined in.
No, that's right. Yeah. Well, he happens to have a great voice, but yeah. he does have an ability to sing. The night in the lab, and I, these things like this tickle me because in one case you're talking about, in one song you're talking about, it's an Irish tune that you've rewritten and you actually mentioned Skype and all sorts of
right.
matters in that. Night in the lab, you're talking about, you're getting pretty specific about, you know, two people meeting in a lab setting. And
well, I'm always fascinated by romance.
So you have to do that research at some point. You have to be familiar with those terms.
Well, you know, I've had a long life, but... you know, romance at work, although I know there's complications with it, but it's also very valid because you're seeing someone in a working environment where they're not thinking of you. You're not on a date. You're just seeing them in life, doing their concentrating on something else, and you're seeing how they are.
Yeah.
And it's easy to fall in love with this, you know, this image of someone at work, I think.
The one of your notes in here, as I go through the liner notes, you describe one of the banjo tunes, and this is a term you can help. I know what you mean. Noodle.
Yeah.
And then you have a tune.
Well, noodles means just sit with your instrument and just kind of fool around until you know, something comes out. You might not even be looking for something. It might accidentally come out.
The Santa Fe, I mean, the first song I've read, and as soon as I heard it, I recognized. You know, it's funny because I thought about Danny Barnes, who's won one of your awards, and mm-hmm. Danny being in Texas – he will tell you that he's influenced by all these button players, all these Mexican musicians. That he, mm-hmm. how he processes that through the banjo, I don't know. But Danny and I thought, well, here are in essence horn players doing kind of the mariachi kind of style, but really yeah. just, and that's the best way to describe it. But of all the instrumentation in bluegrass, how do you get that sound? Except for the fact that I understand why you wrote it now and your connection to Santa Fe and, yeah. and that part of the country, but.
Well,
how does that come into the?
I used to live there in Santa Fe for a long time, so I heard a lot of mariachi music, and also in Southern California and San Diego area.
Yeah,
I had experiences in Tijuana early on. You know, going down, it's kind of a fun place for a teenager to go. It's quite a bit different now. It used to be very rowdy, and now it's very, very nice actually. So the sound of the mariachi, but the sound of the song Santa Fe, it just sounds like you need mariachis on it. You know,
well,
supply the atmosphere.
It works. People in bluegrass complain about a lot of things, which I think is nonsensical. But should you have a drum? Can you have an electric? Mm-hmm. I mean, if it fits. Yeah. But you're the first that I think put mariachi horns in a bluegrass tent.
Well, you know, these things. We also have a version without the mariachis.
Okay.
You know, it's just a recorded version. But you know, for some bluegrass stations, that might bristle at the mariachi. But these things come out and they seem so bold or something, and then 2 years later, everybody forgets about it. It's just a part of the song.
I was talking to, by the way, you give nod to the Lubin Brothers. It's not like you're just walking in here and playing music and saying it's bluegrass. You know about the history of this music.
Well, a little
bit. And you were involved.
Well, I realized, when I picked up the banjo at age 16, bluegrass was 16 years old.
That's right.
And
that's right.
So it was a relatively new art form, although when I picked it up, it seemed like it had been around forever.
You're right, you're right.
So I sort of lived along with the history, and there wasn't that much history to learn.
Right. You know, you mentioned the thing being new and startling. I have an interview in the works right now with Ken Irwin of Rounder Records.
Mm-hmm.
J.D. Crow and the New South, when that album came out, the one that's the famous one with Tony Rice and Jerry Douglas and just goes by numbers, that was kind of revolutionary. It's like there was a blowback against that musically, and to me that's like, if there's a more definable bluegrass standard, it's that band and that album. But
there
at the time, it was not
records that were groundbreaking, I guess you'd say, or disturbing.
Well, and the Selvam scene, those things that they did, pulling in, and it wasn't just the instrumentation; it was the sources they were pulling in.
Right.
And they were taking pop songs,
right.
And all of a sudden, in the midst of all these murder death ballads, they were doing James Taylor songs or whatever they felt was appropriate and interpreting them.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So I think those things have to.
Well, the interesting thing about something like some of the records, some of the songs on our record, like All Night Long, it's a bluegrass band playing them.
Yes, exactly.
The only instrument that might be out of place is a percussion going tap tap tap.
Yes.
It's not even a drum,
right?
You know. It's like if somebody was tapping on their guitar head, guitar body.
Well, and the Osborne Brothers used to do that.
Yeah.
Sonny used to do that with the top of his banjo head in some songs.
Oh,
keep the rhythm.
Yeah.
Up this hill and down. Boom, boom. Mm-hmm. That's his fingers hitting the thing. So it's not like everything has to be. Strangest Christmas yet. And when I heard this, I thought, great, now I have to redo my Christmas show. So what was it at this point that...
Well, I have wanted to write a Christmas song for a long time. And I think I wrote these lyrics maybe 5 years ago and played with them and toyed with them and kind of corrected them. I had the idea. And then on this last record, they said, do you have any Christmas songs? And I said, I do. I said, I have this Christmas lyric, but I don't have the music. I've never been able to come up with the music. So I farmed it out. Charles Humphrey, the bass player for the Steep Canyon Rangers, and his partner, whose name, of course, escapes me right now, they came up with this great melody for it.
And you said there's already a video that's available.
Yeah.
It was not available yet, but it will be seasonally when it comes out. And you've already talked about the fact that you placed in here Always Will, So Familiar. Those are the tunes that we may have heard from either Bright Star or one of the albums leading up to that.
Yeah, Always Will and So Familiar.
And they're just
I think of them as little sorbets.
There are other musical office supplies, and I don't know that I think of office supplies when I hear the tune and you say
there is a lot of it's one of those things where you don't have a title for a song, so you have a shorthand that came about through some odd, it's not even worth telling the tale, and then you never come up with anything better. So he said, let's just leave it. That's the way we know the song of Supplies. And by the way, it's not the only bad song title in the world. There's a lot of bad song titles.
I don't think it's bad.
Yeah.
Just that when your notes it says, doesn't it make you think of Office Supplies?
Yeah.
I thought, well, it makes me think of a great banjo tune.
That's a lie on my part.
You know, it's funny. The last tune on here you mentioned, co-written with Tony Trischka. You talk about a guy who just names songs based on there's a street sign or there's whatever, because I think he's, but Promontory Point is one that...
Well, he was doing an album on Civil War, and part of that history was the meeting of the two trains at Promontory Point.
Yeah. The girl from River Run is one I mentioned earlier, where you give a nod to the Lubin Brothers style as far as the singing and the origin of the tune itself goes back quite a ways. You simply did a history to that.
Well, this is a new tune. But it's based on a song that I heard a long time ago that's very Irish music hall type song called The Darling Girl from Clare. I didn't realize it's had a revival lately with the three Irish tenors.
Oh, okay.
And they would do that song too. But I always love the song. It's such a great narrative, which I emulated in that song.
Yes, yeah. It's a great... great album. I've enjoyed it immensely, and I think that people who listen to it should have the same reaction I've had. That my favorites change all the time, but I do that all the time.
I'm glad that's a good sign.
Yeah, I think it is a good sign. I don't get stuck on one and ignore the rest. And I think everybody will do that.
It's interesting when we used to get vinyl records.
Yeah,
you'd sort of pick out a Joni Mitchell record, say, it's a big burden to go over there and turn it over.
That's right.
So you tend to listen to one side.
Right.
And then the other six songs on the other side are strangers. And you go, oh, I didn't know that one there.
That's right.
You know, of course, Joni Mitchell had every song great.
Yes.
So you always flip that record over. But when the CDs came along, they were all in a series. So you didn't really miss, you didn't have that limitation.
But you know what? It was a limitation. You have to turn the record over. But also it was... you didn't always have to absorb, let's say, 65 minutes of it. You could do a half and then come back and do a half.
That's right.
And I thought there was more familiarity for me.
I agree.
I don't know whether we get ear to fig or whatever, but, you know.
Albums are traditionally, 10 to 13 songs.
Yeah.
They should be six.
Yes.
They should be six or seven.
That's
so
right.
So you can get to know those songs.
Right. That's right.
You know?
That's right.
In fact, maybe that's what we'll do next, is release a six-song album.
They exist. It's always bold. On the Water, then I think I'll be finished with you.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about On the Water. You make a note of the fact that it's a sailing song, which is at least on the water. Yeah.
Well, actually, the chorus of that song, I woke up one morning, and it was in my head. It was like I had dreamed it. And I was singing, oh, yo, I, oh.
That's
along
the lyric I wanted. Yeah, I wanted to ask you where that came from. So now I know.
And it just came from a dream. And I went, I said, should I write this down? And I dragged myself out of bed and hummed it into a tape recorder. And then developed a song from there. But I think that's the only time that's ever happened where I woke up with a song.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you specifically about that portion you just went through.
Mm-hmm.
Because I couldn't figure out where it came from.
Well, actually,
it's almost like an American Indian.
I checked it out to make sure. Well, that could be, but I checked it out. Like, I whistled it into Shazam to see if there were any other melodies that were like that.
Does that work, by the way?
I think it does, yeah.
Okay. Right.
And then I coincidentally heard a song, like a rap song, that they were singing OEO. But a completely different melody.
Okay.
But I think OEO is maybe a traditional nonsense syllables.
I think so.
You know.
They ought to be.
Yeah. Well, they are now.
Well, listen, I really enjoyed the album. It's on Rounder. It's out now. People
it's
can get
now.
Their hands on this on Rounder. It's the long-awaited album. It's you and the Steep Canyon Rangers. And I think every song is just... I enjoy them all. And I don't
great.
Tell that
thank
to people
you.
That I'm
thank
sitting
you.
With, but
I always
for different
to,
reasons. For different reasons, I enjoy
it. I try not to have filler.
Yes.
Make sure they belong.
I know. Yeah. I know you're very serious about content and editing and getting things down to what you really, really needed to be done. So I think you've done it on this one.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks,
Dave. Great to be here again.